This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. President Bush, how's he doing? Well, it's easy enough to bandy about the question, and vigorous debate is sure to ensue. But it's much harder to apply some truly objective benchmarks to the job of President of the United States. A group of presidential scholars has tried to do just that, though. A conference they held last April called the George W. Bush Presidency, An Early Assessment, has been developed into a book of the same name. Before we hear more about that, we want to ask you, how do you rate the president's leadership skills as a communicator, as a decision maker, as an organizer, or as a policymaker? Our phone number, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is TOTN at NPR.org. Fred Greenstein heads the Princeton Leadership Studies Program at the Woodrow Wilson School of Public and International Affairs. He organized the conference, edited the new book, and he joins us now from the studios at Princeton University. Thanks for joining us on Talk of the Nation.
I'm happy to be with you.
Now, you identify six job requirements that are essential for the presidency. Give us a quick overview.
One is the president's ability to communicate. The modern presidency is a teaching job. It's a preaching job. Second is the president's capacity to organize his subordinates. A lot of people work for presidents, and if presidency is disorganized, it can be disastrous. Third is the president's skill. This is a very sticky, difficult political system to make work, and it makes quite a bit of difference to have someone who knows the art of the politics. But president also needs a sense of direction, what the senior Bush called the vision thing. He has to know what he's using the skills for. Finally, we're interested in the president as someone with a mind. How does he think? What are his cognitive capacities? And someone with feelings. Does he have emotional intelligence? Is he the sort of person who will be self-indulgent and get carried away, or is he in control of his own psyche? So that's a quick fix for you.
Well, where do you think in those categories, or more to the point, the scholars that you worked with think, where do they think the president comes out well, and where does he come out badly?
Well, there's some diversity in the performance. I think many of us feel that while as a public communicator, he's improved markedly after 9/11, that he's hurting himself in his own presidency, but by not doing a better teaching and communicating job, although sometimes he's done very well, particularly right after 9/11. Organizationally, we would give him, many of us would give us high points for putting together a highly professional team. It's easy to contrast the team in which, say, Bill Clinton came in and the much more experienced team with which the second Bush came in.
I think probably
so
fair
we
to
could
say
run down the whole list, but that might take too much time.
Yes, it might. Now, you call yourself a political psychologist. How did you get interested in this?
I actually started up in your field. I was going to be a newspaper reporter, but I came of age in an era when there were swirling passions. Joe McCarthy, the origins of the Cold War. I got Korean era GI Bill and went off to study with a famous political scientist who also was a psychoanalyst, and I got hooked and became a professor.
Okay. Let's get some listeners involved, and this is Jim, who's with us from Brockton, Massachusetts. So, Jim, how would you evaluate how Bush is doing?
Well, I voted for him. Oh, thank you for taking my call, by the way.
That's okay.
I voted for him, and I was suddenly appalled at the actions that were coming forth from his presidency. And I would just like to ask your guest, do you think that it's sinking in that his folksy moral stance is really just a front for a power grab and for a quite immoral sense of just trying to keep his position and trying to aggrandize himself? I have changed my mind about him over these last 2 years, and I think that he's just simply will even lie and do a lot of other what we consider to be immoral things behind the scenes secretively simply to keep his position. I don't know what you think.
Well, if you want to dig a little further in this, it may be that your public library would have acquired this book. It's called The George W. Bush Presidency, an Early Appraisal, and it was just published by Johns Hopkins University Press. A couple of our people would disagree with that very sharply. One of the contributors sees him as the inheritor of a three-generation history of public service going back to his grandfather, who was an Eisenhower-era senator. A couple of other people, particularly the people who deal with his budgetary policy and his foreign policy, see him as someone who is a unilateralist, as misguided. And one of the contributors argues that there is some dissembling in his budgetary policy. I can't get inside his head. And it may be a strength or it may be a disability of political scientists like me that we look at the play of politics the way people of the Discovery Channel who report on the African wildlife look at that. They don't side with the lions and say they're mean, nasty hours. Animals or the zebras and say it's just too bad that they get eaten up. I can't get in his head. I think basically he has a kind of idealism rather than a hypocrisy.
The dissembling part would have been, I think, in the University of Maryland professor Alan Schick's contribution mm-hmm. on the federal deficit,
yes.
in which he speculates that if Bush has his way, and I think I'm quoting here, during his mm-hmm. presidency, many programs will be scaled back simply because there will mm-hmm. not be enough money to go around, not because he has launched a frontal attack. They would not dare try to repeal popular programs, but mm-hmm. starve the programs to death. So that would be the effect of the deficit.
I think that the caller's viewpoint is best reflected in the implicit treatment of Bush's psychology by Professor Schick.
Now, have you done these kinds of assessments for other presidents?
I have a book called The Presidential Difference: Leadership Style from FDR to Bill Clinton, which will come out next year with a chapter on George W. Bush. So I've actually done my little checklist on 12 presidents, counting George W., or 11 in the book. And the one who Bush reminds me of actually is Truman, in the sense that he got off to a very lackluster start, faced a challenge, and really took some very strong and very controversial positions. Now, I'm not judging either Truman or Bush's positions in what I'm saying, but this is an example of a president who shows a growth curve.
Now, obviously, this is an interim assessment of the Bush presidency, 2 years in, and you say barring another major attack in the United States, it's an assessment that should hold up for the next election, which is clearly why you're making it available now.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to ask you, you obviously have even less information about the contenders waiting in the wings to challenge President Bush,
mm-hmm.
and obviously we don't have time to profile each of them, but yesterday you weighed in on Howard Dean. You were quoted in USA Today about talking about his famous temper. You said it's easy to feel uneasy about Howard Dean in the Oval Office. As you look around at the other candidates on the Democratic side, do any jump out at you in any particular category?
Well, I think with Kerry, I would worry about organizational capacity. He's just fired his campaign manager. He made that choice, and there's a considerable feeling that that's a campaign that's not taking off now. Now, Dean, I had forgotten that I'd given that interview. It was so long ago, and I didn't know I wound up being quoted. But with Dean, today's information suggests that organizationally he's got quite an effective operation, and that's what's led a number of major labor unions to sign on mm-hmm. with him.
Ask me the latest just today.
Yeah.
Let's get another caller in before we have to go, and this is Chris, who's in San Francisco.
Yes, gentlemen, thank you very much for giving me some time today. I'm just curious, especially after listening to a gentleman like Mr. Kucinich, who seems to be just so incredibly on the ball, as far as I'm concerned anyway. And then to hear about anyone giving Mr. Bush high marks, I wonder, these gentlemen who have done this study, sir, you in particular, and your colleagues, how much of your own political bias, if any, really goes into your end result?
I try to be detached, and I've given presentations during campaigns, for example, on Gore and Bush in the 2000 campaign, and asked my audience to figure out how I would myself vote. And let me say that I've voted in every election since 1952, and they divide 50-50. Now, maybe I'm just being clever or dissembling, like the person at the Massachusetts caller referred to. But these are complex figures, and people are going to differ on them. I wouldn't begin to think of telling you how I'm going to vote, because that's not what I do in my professional capacity. My contributors don't all take that view, and we've just heard a quotation from one of them.
Chris, thanks very much. We've got to move on. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Fred Greenstein, thank you very much today.
Thanks for having me on.
Fred Greenstein heads the Princeton Leadership Studies Program at the Woodrow Wilson School of Public and International Affairs. He's the editor of The George W. Bush Presidency, an Early Assessment. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.